Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in San Diego and North Orange County and earned a bachelor's degree in sociology from UCLA and was a four-time All-American basketball player. In 1978, she became the first woman player ever drafted by the Women's Professional Basketball League. And in 1980, she became the only woman to ever sign a contract with an NBA team, the Indiana Pacers. Her autobiography is entitled, You Let Some Girl Beat You? Her name, Ann Myers Drysdale. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, a News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. We're with Ann Myers Drysdale, who has performed historic events and achievements as often as most of us get haircuts. Ann, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. I'm really excited to be on your show.
Can we start by talking about your childhood? You were the sixth of 11 children, and your mom and your dad, please.
Well, they grew up in Milwaukee. My dad played basketball at Marquette. That's where they met. And my mom was one of eight, and my dad was one of one. And they moved out to San Diego after they got married. The first six of us were born in San Diego, the next three in Chicago, and then the last two out in Southern California. Grew up basically Irish Catholic. My dad is German Polish, but my mom's all Irish. And we just, being a big family and growing up around sports, it was a great outlet, and there was a lot of competition in the house.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
Work ethic from both of them, and also the kindness that my mom had for others and just opened up her heart. But certainly the work ethic that the two of them, I mean, my dad worked for Sears for over 30 years, and when he'd come home from off the road, I mean, he was weekends mowing the lawn or doing things with the kids and so forth. But my mom diligently, I mean, whether it was cooking meals or making lunches or vacuuming and folding clothes and ironing clothes and making beds and just her, you know, she was just always, always there for us.
You became the first woman to be signed to a four-year athletic scholarship in college at UCLA. How did that happen to come to be?
Well, Jack, I think a lot of it's timing, being in the right place at the right time. As I said, I think my work ethic was positive because of not only my parents, but my brothers and sisters, and because sports was a big part of our lives. Patty was the oldest of 11. And she went to Cal State Fullerton, played basketball, volleyball, softball, played pro softball, won a championship at Cal State Fullerton in basketball. She was kind of like the forefront of everything. And I just came along at the right time when Title IX signed in 1972. I was still in high school. My brother David went to UCLA on a basketball scholarship playing for Coach John Wooden. So, you know, a lot of people thought that I was going to go to Fullerton and play for Billy Moore, who happened to be my Olympic coach in 76. But as she had coached my sister Patty. But, you know, we didn't have a lot of money, our family. I mean, we went to the local colleges in Southern California. But when my brother David was at UCLA and his roommate was Kenny Washington, who was on Coach Wooden's first two championship teams and was the women's basketball coach, they came home one weekend and said, hey, how would you like a basketball scholarship at UCLA? So that's kind of how I was recruited, and that's how things worked. But certainly being in the right place at the right time with Title IX, my brother David being at UCLA playing for Coach Wooden, which had a huge following at that time. Obviously, you said UCLA and you thought John Wooden and basketball. And certainly, you know, coming in 1974-75, also had just played. I was the first high school player to play on a USA national team my senior year in high school. And so I think, you know, just everything kind of fell into place for me. So, and UCLA has really shaped me as far as who I am today. in a lot of ways. And so I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have not only played basketball, volleyball, and run track at UCLA, but also get a degree from UCLA.
You mentioned the Wizard of Westwood, John Wooden, arguably the greatest coach of all time, college coach, 10 national championships. At one point, they won 88 straight. Talk to us about John Wooden.
Well, you know, he didn't like that term, Wizard of Westwood, because during that time, a lot of people felt that he was using wizardry. And the fact that he put in a lot of hard work, you know, he was the first, he was a three-time All-American at Purdue. An academic All-American, and then also was the first to be inducted in the Naismith Hall of Fame as a player and as a coach. And so, I mean, his work ethic was second to none. His honesty and his loyalty, the fact of how he even received how he made his decision to come to UCLA back in the 40s as the coach. He was offered the job at Minnesota. They were going to get back to him, and a fluke snowstorm came, shut down all the telephone lines, and UCLA had called. He committed to UCLA. Minnesota called back, and he went by his word. He had already committed to UCLA, and as much as he wanted to be the coach at Minnesota, he was committed. And thank goodness for all of us in Southern California, and I think the basketball world, because he was a man of his word. He was a man of faith. You didn't want to leave being around him because you just felt such a wonderful presence about being around him. I know my freshman year was my brother David's senior year, and Papa, which I call him Papa, did not allow too many people in practices, but because I was Dave's sister and the whole basketball connection and Kenny Washington, and he allowed me to watch practices after my classes, and then we would prepare for our practice, which would be after the varsity. And so I had an opportunity to not only watch his practices on a daily basis, but his practices were our practices because Kenny Washington ran a lot of the same things. And also the women's department had not developed as of yet. And so I spent a lot of time over in the men's athletic department with Papa and Gary Cunningham and Jim Bush and Dick Vermeil and Terry Donahue and some of the other coaches for the men's side.
John Wooden once said, we lost him 10 years ago, but John Wooden once said, Ann was the one who really got women's basketball going. Quite a tribute. He was famous for the Pyramid of Success.
Well, first of all, you know, timing is everything. Like I said, my sister Patty opened the door, and all those women before me, I came along, were Title IX, my brother David. Media was just starting to show our games. There was attention by the media coming to our games because of the relationship with Papa and my brother David. So timing for me was everything for women's basketball. If I'd gone somewhere else, probably women's basketball would not have gotten the recognition it did. But the Pyramid of Success, you know, is not just a part of basketball, it's just a part of life. And, you know, the title really, I mean, success is peace of mind, knowing that you did your best, that you're capable of becoming. And in today's world, I think we lose sight of what success really is. And it's just doing your best or what you can do. A lot of people measure success in different ways. But, you know, his blocks and his pyramid, whether it's friendship or loyalty or competitive greatness, confidence, poise, you know, they're just everything that you do in a game or, you know, the game of basketball, the game of sports, is the game of life, and to use those in a daily basis. And he says, you know, live each day as your masterpiece, because, you know, nothing's promised to us. And so again, being around Papa was, you know, it just made you feel safe. It made you feel, I might get emotional here, Jack. Sorry, I miss him. And we lost him before his 100th birthday. But, you know, even after he lost his wife, Nellie, you know, he wanted to go with Nellie. But for him to have lived as long as he did afterwards, another 20, 30 years for all of us, what a blessing.
I think he wrote a poem to her every month after he lost her. And we're talking to Ann Myers Drysdale. When we come back, we're going to go back to February 18th, 1978. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Ann Myers Drysdale, who was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame in 1993. And February 18th, 1978, UCLA plays Stephen Austin. What happened?
We won the game. We won the game.
Ann, you won the game. You recorded the first quadruple double in NCAA Division I basketball history. You had 20 points, 14 rebounds, 10 assists, 10 steals.
Well, that just meant I had good teammates. And but it was going up against Sue Gunner was our Olympic coach with Billy Moore. She was the assistant coach. And so it was a big game, and they had really fun. They had a good team, and they had a lot of good players. But, you know, I was really kind of, Jack, a mini version of my brother David. And I liked to play the game with a lot of intensity, as he did, and not just on one side of the ball. Which means I love to play defense. I love to rebound. And certainly the numbers kind of showed that. But you have to have good teammates, too. I mean, that's what's so great about basketball. It is a team sport. It's just not one person. But I was a pretty intense player. And so I would try and do as much as I could.
We're talking to Ann Myers Drysdale, who was the first four-time collegiate All-American women's basketball player. 1978, you become the first woman ever drafted by the Women's Professional Basketball League. I believe the New Jersey Gems. Talk about that first season of Women's Professional Basketball League.
Well, actually, just a little background, and I was on the 1976 Olympic team, started on that team. Billy Moore was our coach. Sue Gunner was the assistant. And certainly in those days, you still had to be an amateur. And that has changed for the Olympics. You can be a pro now. But I was a sophomore at UCLA, and I had hoped to go to the 1980 Olympics. I needed a couple extra quarters at UCLA to get my degree. And I know when I was a freshman, we'd heard talk about a new league starting at some point. And so in 78-79, the first league, the Women's Professional Basketball League, which we call the WBL, opened up. And I was drafted by the Houston Angels, and there were 12 teams. And because of that first year, I wanted to stay amateur for the 1980 Olympics. So even though I was the number one draft pick, I would have loved to have gone into the league, but I wanted to stay amateur at least one more year to be an Olympian and then go into the league. And so that first year, you know, they drew some attention. There were 12 teams, as I said. And by the time I got there, the second year of the league, which was my first year, I was co-MVP of the league. And then into my third year, or into the third year of the league, which would have been my second year in the league, they hadn't paid me all my money. So I was kind of holding out. And unfortunately, the league folded 2.5 years in existence. And but that's where we are today with the WNBA, because of not only the WBL, but subsequently some of the other leagues and the ABL. And but, you know, the Olympics was so important to me. And then that's, even though I was the number one draft pick in the WBL, they had that first year. And then the Houston Angels traded my rights to the New Jersey Gems. But in that interim, I was asked to come and play for the Indiana Pacers. I had just come back from the World Championships. We had won gold, and we were in Russia for the Spartacade Games, and we were going to go down to Mexico for the World University Games. I was a captain of those teams, and so when I got the offer, my brother David was already playing in the NBA with the Milwaukee Bucks, and I knew a lot of guys in the NBA. But I certainly was an opportunity of a lifetime. So even though I had passed up the WBL, and now I was going to have to make that decision whether I was going to stay amateur or try out for the Indiana Pacers. And I chose to try out, and it was an opportunity of a lifetime. And it was the best decision I ever made.
Bill Russell, the great Celtic center, said, "Annie was one of the best players ever. I didn't say male or female. I said ever." All right, you underplayed again. You were the first and only woman to sign a contract with an NBA team, the Pacers. for $50,000. Talk about those, that week that you spent with them.
Well, first it was very difficult because I had to make the decision to leave the USA team. And I left the team. It was a very difficult decision before our president, Jimmy Carter decided that we were not going to go to the Soviet Union for the Olympics in 1980. So that decision for me was more difficult than because it was made before the decision by our president. And so, you know what, I thought, again, an opportunity of a lifetime. I look back 5 years earlier, Jack, when I was in high school, I had the opportunity to play on the boys' summer league varsity basketball team. And I had planned on playing during the school season. But when you're in high school, you go through a lot of emotions physically and mentally as far as what people say about you and so forth. And so I had a lot of people talk me out of it, even though I had played summer league ball with the guys. Who would have thought 5 years later that really my life was being prepared for this time? And because my whole life I'd played against guys, even at UCLA and pickup games and so forth, whether it was with Will Chamberlain or Marcus Johnson or Mark Eaton and a lot of the guys that came down to Pauley Pavilion. But it was an opportunity of a lifetime. It really was. And my brother David, he was apprehensive, but he was supportive, as my family was. And I even had Slick Leonard, Bob Leonard, who was the coach at the time, come out to California and try and talk me out of it. Sam Nassy was the new owner of the Indiana Pacers, and certainly it was a publicity situation for them, but I never looked at it that way. And it was a free agent rookie camp. I was not drafted. I was signed as a free agent and went through the three-day camp, which we had two practices a day. And physically, mentally, emotionally, it was the best I was ever prepared to play the game. My brother Jeff really helped train me. And I had a lot of other guys down at Cal State Fullerton and doing a lot of different drills that really I knew I had to focus on. And once I left the USA team, my focus was, just on basketball and with the tryout with the Indiana Pacers. Went through the tryout. As I said, I did not make it as a player. But I was with the organization, and I was doing personal service things with them as far as working in the office and broadcasting, opened up the door for broadcasting, which I had taken some classes at UCLA. And so that opened the door for me, and I worked in the front office, but I wanted to play. So they released me from my contract so I could go play in the WBL with the New Jersey Gems. And that's kind of how all things happened with that. And then also in that interim, I was invited to compete in the Women's Superstars, which is where I met Bob Uecker and my future husband, Don Drysdale.
The assistant coach on the Pacers was Jack McCloskey, ultimately became the architect of the bad news, the bad boys. He said about you, fundamentally, she's better than half the guys on this team. And I'm Jack Rasula, and we're talking to Ann Myers Drysdale, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Ann Myers Drysdale. The number of firsts that she's achieved is unbelievable. Annie, you're on a plane, long flight, and the person next to you starts to talk to you, and he or she doesn't know you from Adam. And then the person says, Ann, tell me about your life. What would you say?
Just that I'm a hardworking mom and lost my husband, had to raise my children. Basketball has been so good to me, Jack, that I wouldn't be where I am without it. I love the game. I love playing sports. I played 7 sports in high school. I am blessed with the opportunity to have come from the family that I did, to have 5 brothers and 5 sisters and to be around sports. But, for me, it's about family. It's always about family. And, my people say, what was your greatest award or achievement and so forth? Well, my greatest achievement is my children. And there's no question, because You know, even though I lost my husband, which I miss him every day, and our children, the boys were 5 and 3, and our daughter was 3 months. But his family was so important to me, and it still is, as far as who they are, DJ Darren and our daughter Drew. So, you know, I would probably talk about family more so than anything else.
You had a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and a 3-month-old, and we lost Don Drysdale. How did you ever do it?
Faith, family, and friends. You know, my mom has lost 4 children, and she's gone through a lot of hard times, and certainly she is my role model, my rock, and to see somebody do that, again, my faith is really strong. But I also know that my family, without my family, I probably wouldn't be where I am today either. And just a wonderful support system of friends, whether it be through UCLA, whether through basketball, whether through broadcasting, have met so many wonderful people in my life because of Don and because of basketball. So, you know, just those are the 3 things that carry me through.
All right. You said because of your late husband, Don, you met a lot of great people. Well, I believe the first time you went to Cooperstown was July of 84. There you met Ted Williams, Willie Mays, Henry Aaron, Mickey Mantle, Warren Spahn, 50, unbelievable. What was that weekend like?
Well, it's pretty special to see this fraternity that baseball has. It's different than basketball. What's wonderful about the Naismith, they accept, you know, international women, high school, college, pros. And the Naismith Hall of Fame is not the NBA or WNBA Hall of Fame. But baseball in Cooperstown, it's magical. It really is. And to see all those guys together, it's such a brotherhood. And the stories, baseball stories, there's nothing, you know, whether it's football or basketball, baseball stories are really fun to listen to. And the fact that I remember Don and Ted Williams talking about an all-star game, you know, how many years ago was that? And I guess Williams had hit a home run off Donnie. And Donnie was 19 years older than I was, so I didn't get to see him play and really didn't follow the Dodgers, even though we grew up in Southern California. Those games were not on TV. We were always outside playing basketball or over the line or baseball ourselves and so forth. But, you know, to listen to them talk and kind of jab each other back and forth. And it was funny because when Williams hit the home run, Don came back years later and said, you know, how did, you know, happen? And Koufax said, or not Koufax, but Williams would say, you know, this is what you threw, and they knew what the weather was like and how many players were on base and what the count was. And even with the Dodger greats, whether it be Sandy Koufax or Pee Wee Reese or Duke Snider and Campanella, and it just the stories when they would sit down and talk, it just such a fun time for all of those guys. And great friendships because of the stories.
You mentioned that the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame takes high school coaches, international players. Ulana Semjanova. Tell us about her.
You're good. Ulana Semjanova. And
easy for you to say.
Big Uli. So when I was on the USA team, as I said, out of high school, and we... The team that we were on, we were playing, this is back in 74, 75, that we were playing against the Russians touring around the United States, and we had about a 6-city tour. And the first one was at Madison Square Garden against the Soviet Union. And they had a player on their team called Ulana Semenova, and she was 7-footer, weighed about 250, 260, and their front line averaged 6'4". And their guard, you know, so the Eastern Europeans, they were all pros, even though they were considered amateurs, and their front and their guards, you know, they're like in their 30s. And which is what's so wonderful about the WNBA today, that here in the United States, it's these women get to play well into their 30s and even into their 40s, just like the men can, and make a living at something that they love to do. But Big Uli was tough to play against. And our starting center was Lucia Harris, who was 6'3", and the great All-American at Delta State, won three national titles there. And so we, you know, we had our hands full. We did not beat the Russians. We came close a couple times. But when we came close, they would then make sure they knew who we who they were. But that was the first time we had gone up against Ulyana Semenova. And I was fortunate enough to go into the Naismith Hall of Fame with her, along with some other great names, with Bill Walton, Calvin Murphy, Julia Serving, and Dick. Who was the coach at Marquette? Al
McGuire.
Dick McGuire, Al's brother, Walt Bellamy, and I mean, it was just really a good group. That was what, a really big year in 93 when we all went in, and Ulyana was one of those.
Ulyana, 7 foot, 280, size 21 shoe. The first time I ever saw you in person was September 2002. I went to Springfield, Massachusetts, for the induction, and they were opening the new Basketball Hall of Fame. And there were a couple thousand people, and this woman stood out. Boy, the nuns would slap my wrist. It was like she was just her the size of her head, her hands, her feet. She was lurch-like. And everybody was kind of stepping back and looking out at her. And I saw you go up and treat her like she was Princess Kate. You treated her like a superstar, like your best friend. Why?
Well, she was special. I mean, she contributed to the game and represented her country. And you talk about her size. I mean, Sabonis was built like that too, and who played in the NBA for Portland and probably towards the end of his career. But, you know, she was a special gal, and the fact that we had so many competitions during the 70s and I missed out in the 80s, where actually it was the first time in 1985, I believe, when we had the Goodwill Games, and over in the Soviet Union, I was broadcasting along with Bill Russell and Rick Barry, and the United States, along with Ann Donovan and Cheryl Miller and Lynette Woodard and Denise Curry. They ended up beating Ulyana Semenova and her Soviet Union team. And of course, were they Soviet Union or Russia? I couldn't remember if they had split yet. But yeah, I mean, she's an icon. She's a legend in the game, and what she contributed to the game. And again, very fortunate to have played against her, and very fortunate to have gone into the Hall of Fame with her.
We're talking to Ann Myers Drysdale, who's not only a legend in basketball, but a legendary woman. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Ann Myers Drysdale, who in 1980 became the only woman to ever sign a contract with an NBA team, the Indiana Pacers. And the WNBA today is unbelievable. And Maya Moore was a two-time Naismith College Player of the Year at Connecticut. She was the first pick in the first round, 2011, by the Minnesota Lynx. She's been MVP a couple times. Special woman. Tell us about Maya Moore and why she quit in her prime.
Well, Maya, I think the one thing that's been great with having the WNBA and I know with soccer and ice hockey and so many other leagues for women in this country is giving them a platform and to be able to kind of share what their beliefs are. And I know Maya has stepped away from the game and she is helping prisoners. And I'm not sure what state it is. I want to say St. Louis, but I'm not sure exactly that she felt that there was a prisoner that was unjustly arrested and so forth and trying to get him off. So, you know, using the game of basketball as a platform to help others has been huge. And total respect for her ability to walk away from the game, which, as you said, in her prime, one of the really prettiest players to watch play with her game. I mean, as far as, and I would use that for that terminology, a pretty player, because they're so smooth and just elegant and one of the best jump shooters in the game. But just what she has done with her life is in making a difference for others. And that's what it's all about. And using the game to your advantage to help others is so important. You know, and all of us, the game, whether you play basketball or baseball or football, ice hockey, soccer, whatever you do, it's such a small part of our life. But to be able to use it to our advantage to help others, you know, you can't help, if you can't help somebody along the way in life, you know, and especially somebody that can't do anything for you, that's what you should be doing. And certainly this COVID-19, this pandemic around the world has proven that, I think, with a lot of people, that helping others is what it's all about. And we all are put in that kind of situation. But certainly to have Maya Moore, who one of the top names, an Olympian, came from the University of Connecticut, as you said, you know, MVPs in the WNBA and what she accomplished with the Minnesota Lynx. You know, you'd like for her to continue watching her play. It's like somebody like Diana Taurasi. You don't want her to retire. But we've had that with Cynthia Cooper and Jennifer Gillum and Teresa Weatherspoon and Janice Lawrence and Lauren Jackson. And you just go down the list of great players in the WNBA. And that time is such a fun time in your life to play and the camaraderie that you have with your teammates. But the time will come that you walk away and that you have to do something else. And Maya Moore has done something else to make a difference.
Another chapter of your life from 2012 to 2018 is you were the Phoenix Suns color analyst. Talk about that chapter.
Well, I still am. When I joined the Phoenix Mercury in 2007 as their general manager, and we won two WNBA titles, and certainly with we had Paul Westhead was our coach, and then Corey Gaines, and then our third one, they had asked me to move to the side, so I'm vice president with the Phoenix Suns and the Phoenix Mercury now, and then also have been broadcasting since then. And obviously, we're not doing any of that right now, but in 2014, when Sandy Brondello took over, the Phoenix Mercury won their third WNBA title. So it's been exciting to be a part of the organization and to see the different players that have come through and really impacted. But, you know, the mainstay has been Diana Taurasi. We had Kathy Pondexter and Penny Taylor, which were huge. And then we had Brittany Griner and Dewana Bonner, Candace Dupree and Tamika Johnson and all these other great players that have come through. But, you know, you have to change. And certainly as players get older, they have to change their game too. But Diana Taurasi is one of the great players to watch play. And I've been very fortunate to have a front row seat.
I loved watching for five Sundays in a row The Last Dance. The competitiveness of Michael Jordan was unbelievable. I'm from Chicago. I loved him. But I also was amazed at watching Coach Phil Jackson. He was the maestro, the symphony conductor. He was not only the coach, he was a father figure to a lot of them, a teacher of life, a psychologist. He was a referee breaking up fights at times. Talk about the role of a coach in professional sports.
I think you find that true when you hear people say, well, they don't need a coach to do that. Whether it was Pat Riley, whether it was Red Auerbach, whether it was Chuck Daly, you know, just the great coaches. And you go with the Dodgers, whether it was Walt Alston or Tommy Lasorda. You know, Tommy Lasorda used to say, you put a pinch hitter up there, and if they strike out, you know, you're the dumbest, you know, manager there is, or hits into a double play. But if they get a hit and get a run in, you're the smartest guy out there. So it's the circumstances. And certainly I think any coach has to have that ability to be able to relate to the players. And it is different today, I think, for coaches. I think players still want discipline and need discipline, but I don't think you can go over the top a lot of times with that military kind of attitude. But yeah, I mean, you look at those Bulls teams and you've got different players coming in. As I said earlier too, Jack, it's a team sport. And as great as Michael Jordan was and or Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal, you have to have the players around you. Wilt Chamberlain and Jerry West and Elgin Baylor and all the different players around them. Bill Russell and Casey Jones and Sam Jones and John Havlicek and, you know, all the players around him. The same thing with the Bad Boys as far as Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer, and everybody plays their role. And you need that in a team sport, but you have to have that one leader that's going to go out there and maybe not be on the side that everybody likes, but they're the ones that are willing to go out there and put themselves in front.
As our time winds down together this evening, can you talk to us and give us a little hope in these unprecedented times, please?
We all have adversity, no matter when it happens in your life. And there's a lot of hard times, especially now with this pandemic. And it's sad, but, you know, as I do believe in hope. And a lot of that is with my faith. But, you know, tomorrow's another day and how you wake up. And you got to wake up with a positive attitude, whether you wake up and you make your bed or brush your teeth and say hello to yourself in the mirror and make it a happy day. And as I said, none of us are promised tomorrow, but that's why it's so important to make each day your masterpiece. And the hope is there, whether you find it in spending time with your children or if you have a pet and so forth, or just sending a text or a Zoom to family members that you cannot, you know, really communicate with, that you'd like to see or give a hug to. But there's always a ray of hope in each day, and you have to find that.
Ann Myers Drysdale, the name of the show is With God Anything Is Possible. And you are the epitome of that. Thanks for all you do.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Brasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.